Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and this is my review of the Age of Disclosure documentary. Yes, it's finally here, it's finally released. And of course, spoiler alert, folks, I'm not going to be reading through word for word everything that is said in this documentary, but I am going to give you my thoughts on some of the key call-outs that I think are important. I'm going to go through some of the background to the documentary. I'll talk through some of the big moments in the documentary. I'll give my initial thoughts afterwards. Bear in mind, I've only just watched the documentary, like many of you, in the last 24 hours. It came out on Friday, the 21st of November on Amazon Prime. It's available to buy and is also now available to rent. Folks, in the UK to buy it was like £18, £19, around about $27, $28. It's available to rent now for about £15, which is about $20. So price point I've discussed at length before. It's out there now. If you want to watch it, you can. I would always encourage folks, if possible, to support people who make this type of content. It took up to 3 years, I think Dan Farah has said across various interviews, to put this together. And I think that's also something worth remembering as you watch it. This isn't a documentary set in 2025. It's been released in 2025, but we're never going to know for sure unless Dan Farah comes out and says it. But this documentary was filmed over the course of 3 years. And a lot has changed in that time, including the people. What I'm going to do is touch on who's in the documentary for those unsure. I'm going to read through the call-outs, like I say. It's still the opening weekend of the documentary. It's had a limited cinema release across a few states. I believe Washington, New York, and Los Angeles. If you've attended one of those, some of you have been in touch, please drop me a message and let me know how that was. I'd love to speak to you around that. But yeah, what I'll do is I'll do this review. Again, spoilers if you don't want to hear things that are in the documentary. And then in the coming days, you're going to hear a follow-up show where I'll cover some of the media review, potentially with a guest, looking at the media reviews, the David Grush interview, looking at the Dan Farah appearance on Joe Rogan. Just today, Need to Know has released an episode. Richard Dolan and Bryce Zabel, of course, they co-authored the book together, folks. Big fan of both, and they've shared their thoughts. A lot of this stuff I haven't had the chance to either watch or fully digest yet. I've watched the documentary. It's been a busy weekend. I had a hell of a busy day on Friday when it came out. So yeah, I did manage to watch it, but let's dig into it. So like I say, folks, this film was formally showcased back at South by Southwest Film Festival in March of this year. So 8 months ago, this film was shown to the public in a limited screening at that festival, which is used to pitch various movies, documentaries and whatnot to distributors and such. People thought it was going to come out a lot quicker than it has. Is that by design? Is it because of reasons? We don't completely know. There's all kind of rumours going around. But yeah, it's been around there for a while now. The documentary's been out. And since then, people in Congress and the Senate and others have also seen it. They didn't hand out screeners to folks in the media like myself and others. It's been quite high level. But it has been shown. I'll share my thoughts. It's better than I expected, which is a good, a thumbs up, a positive. Like I said, released on the 21st of November, 2025, limited theatrical run in the United States, and production took around 3 years. It was one of those we heard about a couple of years ago. I think Dave Fravor mentioned a massive documentary coming that was going to blow the lid off of things. I'm paraphrasing. I believe that was on Joe Rogan. Other folks have mentioned across various interviews at different times, there is a documentary in the pipeline. This is clearly what they were getting at, folks. So, who is in it? And I think for most of us, you're going to know most of the cast. But what I want to do is just kind of run through a lot of the names. There are 34 individuals, and I'm going to cover quite a few of them with a very quick blurb, because you might be listening to this just getting into the UFO topic and not being completely sure who a lot of these folks are. So I'm going to read it in the sense that you're coming into this from a fresh perspective and who these people are. And if you're well versed in the topic and you know Luis Elizondo, Jay Stratton, you know them through interviews with myself, media, other podcasts, you know, books. For example, Lou Elizondo is essentially the main character of the documentary. He narrates it. Luis Elizondo, he's a former US military intelligence officer. He led ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and he became the public face of the US government's UAP investigation, largely since 2017. Of course, his book Imminent has since come out. He drops that right at the end of the documentary. He gets that word in there. Jay Stratton is a retired Navy and DIA senior intelligence exec, one of the highest ranking officials. Our early clips, there was a big statement made by Jay Stratton that a lot of folks talked about. I talked about it, pored over it. And that statement was said here. I'll get to that within the body of the documentary. And that was one I was really looking forward to seeing how it was framed. Hal Puthoff is a quantum physicist and former chief scientist at ATIP, known for his research into exotic propulsion and scientific elements of unidentified aerial phenomena. Chris Mellon, huge name, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, and he helped declassify and publicize military UAP encounters, bringing them into mainstream awareness. In the background, a lot of work's been done by people like Chris Mellon to bring this subject forward. James Clapper was a huge name attached to this documentary. He is the former Director of National Intelligence, whose participation in the UAP disclosure conversation has added some raised eyebrows, but also a real high level credibility, I suppose, depending on how you look at James Clapper. When we look at lying under oath and how important is this stuff being said in hearings under oath, James Clapper, I believe, lied under oath once when it came to tapping of phones of US citizens. That was quite a big deal around 10, 11 years ago. And he made a statement which turned out to be false. He had to clarify that himself to say it basically wasn't true. But he answered it like a true politician or government official. Marco Rubio, who at the time was a US senator, now serving as US Secretary of State in the Trump administration. He is acting National Security Advisor. He's one of the most senior officials in this documentary. For me, outside of the US, I look at a Rubio as potential future president down the line, potentially. I don't know if that's the case, but just from the outside looking in, he could be a huge name attached to this subject to get involved. Kirsten Gillibrand is a senator who has authored major UAP legislation, oversight, and chairs a committee on shaping government transparency on aerial phenomena, UAP. Again, folks, other senators and representatives, I won't go into loads of detail here. Andrew Carson, Mike Rounds, Tim Burchett. Eric Davis features in this. He is an astrophysicist and was an advisor to ATIP, notable for his research into anomalous materials and propulsion. Of course, he is the Davis in the famous or infamous Wilson Davis memo. If you want to check out more of that, there are so many great podcasts and deep dives into it. If you just search Wilson Davis memo, you can find out more about that. He's sort of an elusive character in the sense that he doesn't do many podcasts, unfortunately. But yeah, I love to hear from Eric Davis when he speaks. Tim Gallaudet, former US Navy Rear Admiral and Chief Oceanographer, big name, big personality, brings a big credibility when speaking on this topic. And we then go through your pilots, your David Fravor, your Alex Dietrich, your Ryan Graves, and more are involved in this as well. Leaving off huge names there, other representatives, Nobel nominees and such, but we'll get into that as we talk about the documentary. And let me get into that for you now. Like I say, folks, this is a walkthrough of sorts. The documentary goes like an hour and 50 minutes. It's nearly 2 hours. For me, perhaps a tad long. I think something like this, I was worried before this came out, it was going to be dry, I think is the word I've used. And it still was, but it wasn't Sahara Desert dry. I just felt there was a lot of talking. And yeah, maybe 15, 20 minutes off of that runtime, especially given it has to, and I won't spoil the ending, folks, but it obviously has to stop short given it was made and released back in March. I'll go through some of my highlights. Opens with shots of DC. You can tell immediately this is high quality. This is high caliber. Dan Farah is a serious guy who has put something together here that's going to look beautiful. We see clips from various news networks from the hearings with Graves, Fravor and Grush, with various representatives talking. In bold, we get one of those title cards that says, "Everyone interviewed in this film has direct knowledge of unidentified aerial or anomalous phenomena, UAP, as a result of their work for the US government. While some of their knowledge is classified, they are now breaking their silence with what they can lawfully disclose." We then see Graves, Fravor, Chris Mellon, and a whole load of the cast giving a very quick, you know, little vox pops, as they call them in media. "I spent X number of years working on this. I have spent this many years researching this." And it really hammers home the gravitas, the weight of opinion, given the levels of work and government and officialdom that these people have operated at or still operate at. These aren't just members of the public. It's not folks like me talking UFOs. These are real, big, serious, credible people now having this conversation. We are not alone. I don't have to make that statement, but various iterations of that is aired by the cast. We then get the title card, The Age of Disclosure. We see Luis Elizondo for the first time. He's setting the scene with his work and how he got involved. Jay Stratton is then up next. He is one we haven't heard from all that much, so I'm really intrigued to hear what he has to say throughout the documentary, including that one big statement, which I'll get to very quickly. Like Luis Elizondo, he gives quite the background as to what he's been doing in his career before getting involved with the UAP stuff. Lou mentions that for nearly a decade between them, they investigated UAP in ATIP. I'll leave a few quotes from that section. Lewis says, "If you could be in my shoes and see the videos that Jay and I have seen, you would see there is zero doubt that these things were not made by humans." Jay Stratton tells us, don't we know, that the best evidence is classified. And he also says, and here was for me one of the big statements made early on in the trailers, Stratton says, "I have seen with my own eyes non-human craft and non-human beings." That's it, folks. No setup before or after. I did hope we would get to hear more about this during the course of the documentary. We don't. Does he mean pictures, video, or does he mean with his own eyes in the flesh? That statement, again, hopefully I'm not wrong with this. In the coming days, it'll flesh out. But yeah, that was one I did wonder. We talked about the idea that statement perhaps would be followed up or even have context before it that was cut off that said, you know, I've spoken to people that have said to me, I have seen with my own eyes, but that didn't happen. It is just Jay Stratton saying, I have seen with my own eyes non-human craft and non-human beings. I would just love to dig more into that, and I hope to see Stratton on some platforms with someone please asking Jay Stratton to dig into that more. Jay Stratton, folks, does have a book due out this year. I think it's going to be this year, if not next year, but I'm hoping this year through the same publisher as Luis Elizondo. We see Dave Frave, Ryan Graves and Alex Dietrich cover the Tic Tac event, which we've just had the 21st anniversary of last week. Luis Elizondo mentions whenever he and Jay Stratton tried to elevate this to higher positions, or when they did, they were met with massive resistance. And it was either a lack of belief or fear of stigmatization affecting careers. Nice to see Luis Elizondo and Jay Stratton sitting together during the filming. There's been a lot of rumours about their relationship and how they get on together. And Stratton's book may give some conflicting messages to what Lou Elizondo's book did regarding his role, how ATIP worked, the OSAP-ATIP relationship, folks. I hope that's not the case. And I hope if there is conflicting information, then it's minimal. I think the more people that are together on this, the better. Rather than the divisiveness, the infighting, when exactly Stratton and Elizondo filmed their scenes, because Luis Elizondo's book didn't come out until later in 2024. Some of these sit-downs could be 2022, 2023, early 2024. Luis Elizondo talks about them discovering a much bigger and deeper UAP program. And this is indeed the legacy program that has been capturing, retrieving, and reverse engineering UAP in craft. It includes the bodies of the non-humans in them sometimes as well. And I think it tries to hammer home to the audience watching this, not your general UFO crowd. And I hate to say this, folks, but documentaries like this don't seem to be made for people like us. I can't see it really being picked up by many folks that aren't people like us. So I do see positives about potential impact, and I'll get to that at the end. But yeah, so I think it tries to hammer home this idea of a legacy program. Maybe that sort of stuff could be fleshed out more through the documentary. I don't think there's enough maybe dumbing it down for a public who know nothing about this. We're taken back to 2017, the early interviews with Dave Fravor on the news. We see Rubio, we see Rounds, we see Gillibrand. Big names to an audience watching a UFO documentary who aren't familiar with the UFO topic and seeing some really serious politicians talking about this. Marco Rubio, he talks about 9/11 and how the lack of preparation and readiness led to the disaster from an intelligence point of view. He says he would hate for that to happen again in relation to UAP. All kinds of chatter, I'm sure, around 9/11 and what happened on that day, the lead up to it, what happened after. But if you just take things at face value, in terms of an intelligence failure, it's huge. And to hear someone bring that up in an official capacity, a guy who's in a lofty position now within the US to say, we wouldn't want something like this to occur in terms of UAP that we're not ready for, that we could have been and we should have learned from an event like 9/11. So I think that's really, really striking commentary. Luis Elizondo goes back to basics here in a good way. He goes over the observables, the 5/6 observables. Had to stop myself short of saying 6/7 there, folks. Good God, that chills me to the bone, that comment. He goes over hypersonic velocity, mentioning our fastest craft goes 4,600 miles per hour. They've got UAP clocked at 40,000 miles per hour or faster, 10 times what our fastest craft go at. He talks about instantaneous acceleration. He mentions and gives context, which I think is so useful for folks. At full speed, the SR-71 Blackbirds needs half the state of Ohio to turn. UAP have been documented doing this instantaneously or stopping on a dime, stopping bang immediately, without anything being torn to shreds. If you've seen Top Gun with Tom Cruise, Top Gun Maverick, the most recent one, phenomenal movie. Cinema, pure cinema, folks. I would encourage folks. But early on in that film, you see them testing an aircraft that goes certain velocities, and you see the turning circle required with this beautiful shot and the distance that it needs to actually turn. And that's what he's getting at there. Low observability, he mentions. So all modern aircraft have a signature, exhaust heat, sonic booms, etc. UAP leave almost no observable signatures. They mention transmedium travel, one of the big ones, I think, the sexy ones that would get people's attention. These objects can travel in space, air, and water without any compromising. And I think as part of transmedium travel, something that's not often mentioned enough is the idea these objects can also travel through solids, and I think that should be considered as part of that transmedium travel. Anti-gravity is another. So UAP defy our gravity with no signs of propulsion, no control surfaces, no wings, no obvious ability to maneuver, no flaps, etc. And I really like that recap for the public. It's one we often can overlook, but is required given who this documentary is largely aimed at. Dave Fravor reminds us the Tic Tacs being spotted were coming down from high altitude, loitering for 3 hours and going back up. It made me wonder, you know, where were they going back up to? Because I think quite often we've talked about the Tic Tac and events like that where the objects were caught going under the water off the coast of California. If they were going back up as well, are they going back up to what? A mothership? A normal airplane type craft, a large drone? What is it? What were they going back up to? And surely data like that is out there somewhere, no doubt massively classified. That is the shit that gets classified that would really potentially be a big smoking gun, because those Tic Tacs, folks, that wasn't a one day event. That wasn't a 1 hour event. Those were there for 2 weeks. They tracked those. I think it was 10 days to 2 weeks. Those objects are tracked. You can't tell me that multiple agencies were not all over that from a satellite point of view, from a underwater acoustic point of view, from any number of sensors that track all kind of things off those coasts. And Elizondo then mentions the sixth observable, biological effects. This introduces Professor Gary Nolan into the conversation. Gary talks about how our own technology, like electricity pylons, can cause harm to humans by getting too close for too long, and that's our own technology. Now imagine a more advanced civilization or non-human technology and what that could do. We are introduced to UAP task force member Mike Flaherty. He was an Intel official, experienced biological effects of UAP himself, says he observed or experienced this more than once. Hints at that hitchhiker effect, folks, that, you know, once you come into contact with this phenomenon, whatever it may be, it often follows you, and says anyone who had an interaction had a 25% mortality rate. One in four people die from contact with these things. Like, that I think is one that, especially in the corridors of power, maybe it's not a public conversation we hear too often. That's a biggie. Jay Stratton clears up that the Pentagon lied about Luis Elizondo working as part of ATIP. There's a big statement for the public to hear. It shouldn't be a surprise, though, that they lied about this. They have lied about a lot when it comes to this topic particularly. I do like that they present the idea that perhaps the objects are coming from the ocean. They dip into that. That would make a lot of sense potentially. But like Hal Puthoff says, whoever it is, they are here. They have been operating here for a long time. So at this point, my opinion is always fluid. I call that sitting on the fence or whatever. I don't think it is, but I like to say that depending on the next few days, what I read, what I see, the follow-up interviews, I need to watch Farah on Rogan. It'll allow me to form a more solid opinion. Yeah, I'll see what happens, but these are just initial thoughts. I'm thinking it's better than I thought it was going to be. I think at this point we're about half an hour into the documentary. It's not anywhere near as dry as I expected. I think it still lacks some really interesting footage to keep members of the public's attention, if nothing else. The price point for me right now is prohibitive for folks, or maybe prohibitive. People are saying that online. I'm just sharing the feedback. Will people without an interest already who have heard about the UFO topic stump up $20 to $30, $15 to £20 to rent or buy this? That is one for their marketing team. I'm sure they know what they're doing. I can't help but think this being shown on a platform like Netflix or even Amazon Prime, but with no cost for Prime members, which a lot of folks online seem to think that would be the case, would have really helped. But maybe that's a bit obvious, you know, with no price point being attached. Luis Elizondo names the CIA, the US Air Force, and the Department of Energy and other defense contractors as being the gatekeepers of the legacy program. One interesting point he mentions is the DOE having their own classification system. The Atomic Energy Act, for example, is used to hide the legacy crash retrieval program, which makes it really difficult to investigate, to FOIA request for people to get access with different clearances, part of that stonewalling that happens. Hal Putov says some spicy stuff here, which I like. Putov brings up different species associated with craft. Eric Davis, sitting beside Harold Putov, brings some big claims in. He says he is aware of two advanced species, one of which had made contact with the legacy program. I like Putov talking about the idea of gifted craft, not crashes, being distributed to all nations, perhaps as a giant IQ test. Who can reverse engineer these first? Imagine that was the case. That certainly for me would be a huge reason for the secrecy. Is there a reason for some of these wars that happen with massive nations up against smaller nations going in there for a reason they give publicly, but secretly they know there's some technology there they want to get their hands on? This can go down rabbit hole territory, folks, can't it? But even back in the day, the whole Iraq, UAE, weapons of mass destruction, there's talk that, you know, we went in there for the oil, nothing to do, as we know they didn't have the WMDs that they said, the UK, the US all jumped in. Was there something else perhaps they were going in there for? It gets a bit conspiratorial, but you never know. Mike Rounds comes on and talks about how some of this is so secret, very few people across the US government has ever had the access to it. Rubio comes on and says it's naive to think presidents can even ask to get the brief on all of this when they hit the office. And it's important, he notes here, the president wouldn't even necessarily know who or how to ask. The people who aren't voted in, stay in roles deep hidden for 30 plus years, these generals that don't get demoted or kicked out or voted out, they stay in those roles largely out of the public eye. Those are the folks who would be running this stuff from a public point of view and a secrecy point of view. Eric Davis seems to take the mantle at this point for me in the documentary as the guy with the more extreme stuff to say. And I think probably some of the stuff that's going to keep attention of a public who, I won't lie, I have a short attention span, folks. And even watching this, I can be bad for checking how long's left. And I did it 3 or 4 times during this just to see where I'm at. Perhaps I'm taking notes as I watch it as well, so I can't just watch it necessarily and enjoy the same way. I checked a few times to see where things were at, and I wonder, would members of the public do the same? You know, how long's left? How long's left? An hour and 20 minutes. I'll turn off and come back to it. But Eric Davis seems to take the mantle as the guy seeing extreme stuff. He mentions that George Bush Sr. had private conversations with him decades ago. And one of those, he mentioned the UFO landing on the tarmac at Holloman Air Force Base, where allegedly a non-human entity came out the craft and made contact. I think that's the kind of stuff that'll make people go, huh, that's interesting. Can I go find out more about that? And of course you can. There's lots of documentaries and books written about these events. Just over an hour in at this point, we see some of the former military personnel start to come out. Jeff Nusitelli, Bob Jacobs, Mario Woods, who have discussed their incidents, how they were forced into silence at times signing NDAs. I don't know whether it's deliberate. It feels like it's being paced in a way that they know folks might switch off as it goes along at various places, as happens with any form of media, folks. Don't I know it with the podcast, with the audio, with the video, all very different formats. But the longer you stay, you get deeper into the rabbit hole, you're invited to learn more. And I wonder if you watched it, if you felt the same way about that, that the public, the audience watching it is invited to, okay, let's take you another step further. Let's take you another step further. You get more information, things get fleshed out. We get the nuclear weapons connection. We hear from the military personnel who had the more personal experiences. We get to hear a bit about the craft being inside a bubble, explaining how they may move. The notion they move our time is experienced differently inside the bubble as to outside is introduced and talked about, not at great length, but just enough to bring it in as an idea. Almost like if you're watching this as a staffer, a politician, a government official, a member of the public, you're being caught up to speed. It's relatively rapid fire. Okay, you've got that. Bang, on to the next thing. And as you enter the kind of last half hour, the conversation begins to shift to the energy source. Big focus on this. The fact that the one UAP can produce enough energy that would be the same as the entire US consumes in one day is a great way to frame it. I don't think enough of that is done throughout this to say to the public, let's stop for a second. Listen to what you've just heard. Here's a comparison. It doesn't happen enough. And I liked when Lou Elizondo done that with the five observables to give comparisons and examples so people can understand and paint a picture in their heads of really what's being talked about here to really help them. Whistleblowers are brought into the conversation at this point. For me, quite late in the conversation here. Rounds talks about interviewing the whistleblowers. Burchett talks about having worked on craft of out of this world origin. At an hour and 25 minutes, 90 minutes in, folks, I would have liked to have seen this be the end of the documentary, maybe cram a bit more in that comes later still. But yeah, hour and a half in, we get David Grush. It seems to have built to Grush. Stratton says he handpicked Grush to be part of the UAP task force, that everything he says is true, but it barely scratches the surface. And for folks like me, and if you're listening to this and you're well-versed in the UAP topic, that's great to hear that, oh, there's so much more Grush can say. There's so much more we don't know. And we only probably know 3-5% of what's going on, which is a lot that we've got out there, but it's not everything. We've got so little of the puzzle. At 6 p.m. Eastern on Friday the 21st on Fox News, there was a new interview with David Grush. I've not watched it yet. I'm going to watch it today, and I'll put that into my next follow-up reaction pod on this with Brett Baer. I look forward to watching it. We get a good recap of David Grush coming forward, his big comments at the hearing, and what's happened since. I'm grateful to David Grush coming forward because I got my book deal off the back of that. You know, Atlas of UFOs, folks, pick it up for Christmas. Thank you. In the final parts, we see some suggestions of what the intentions of non-human intelligence may be. Luis Elizondo narrates to say that in the last 80 years, we have advanced technology more than we did in the previous 200,000 years, that the uptick in UAP sightings correlate with our own advancements. And we see clips from the 23-24 time period, folks like Tim Burchett speaking in the media about why this is important. We see the 2024 hearings with Elizondo, Gallaudet, Gold and Schellenberger, which is a shame for me. That's quite late on. It wasn't the strongest of the hearings. 2025 for me was a bigger and better hearing, but I get it was kind of recapping, and I think it was not rushed, but it was menial amounts of information, but I think probably because it was put in quite late on in the documentary. It finishes with Hal Puthoff, Jay Stratton, Elizondo all saying things like, you know, we're not alone. The US people need to know. The American people can't know because of classifications. And the final words on screen, folks, as we fade to black, mention the UAP Disclosure Act being put back in for 2025, but receiving huge pushback. As of recording this, that had failed to go through, but there is a possibility that a standalone bill could be introduced by Eric Burleson and co, part of that UAP Secrets Task Force that's ongoing, but we shall see. We don't know that yet. And perhaps that would be something that would be a legacy for this documentary. A real impact for this documentary going forward would be what can happen off the back of it. So to sum up some of my thoughts, folks, what would I have liked to have seen that wasn't there? More footage, more UAP, more UFO stuff, genuinely interesting footage, or at least a section that takes the footage that's shown and explains it to the public what exactly they're seeing, why the quality is the way it is, how we get better footage out. You know, I think even within there was a point in the show, a clip from a news show, and in that clip there's a UAP, but I think it's one of those fake ones from the iPhone app. And actually disappointing to see that kind of stuff even in there. It's not being presented as real footage, but the clip has that in there. That's careless and that should be removed. I want to know what you would like to see or have seen in this documentary. For me, the impact going forward could be big. I am still hopeful. I am still hopeful that this gets a lot of media attention. It is getting media attention. I think there's also a chance that perhaps the numbers of folk they want to watch this won't watch it, that won't buy it. It's really mixed online, folks, really mixed, and I'll get to that when I do the follow-up around the reactions in the next couple of days, so I can see more of the ratings, reviews, all that kind of stuff over the first weekend, because I think that'll kind of tell us a little bit of a story. But I think given so many news outlets have picked it up, the media have picked up clips, just the media finding out these folks are really big names and they're talking about UAP, it gets the conversation back out in front of the public. And at this point, if we could get a Grush op-ed that probably is never coming, if we could get something big, if we could get the UEP Disclosure Act through the door as a standalone bill, that could be huge. There are rumours, and I stress, folks, rumours, that President Trump could make some sort of announcement along the lines of "we are not alone" by the end of the year. But listen, we have heard this before. I get reminded yearly on my Facebook memories of some time ago, a rumour went around Obama was getting ready to disclose long before I started the podcast. So it could be nothing, but we shall see. I would really love to know. What I'm going to do, folks, is just to finish up, I am going to share some of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. And Rotten Tomatoes, if you don't know, is a huge website online for movies, TV shows and whatnot that rate and review films, TV series and such. So right now, there's a tomato meter and a popcorn meter. Tomato meter is your how fresh it is. And right now, there is only 8 reviews, so it's too early. And that's why I say I'm going to wait and do the media stuff properly. But just really early on, it's got an 84% popcorn meter rating. Now, that's members of the public, what they've thought of it. Now, also, let's be fair, that could be people, you get review spamming in a good way and a bad way. That could be folks going on and leaving great reviews because they love the topic. If you've watched it, I've left it a 5-star review on Amazon. Right now, there's only 16 reviews on the UK Amazon, all 5-star, which is fantastic. But that's not running into the hundreds or thousands of reviews yet. You would want to see big numbers come in for that, for people buying it. So that's still, at the minute, would scream to me the really early indications are not huge numbers being bought in the UK, but we'll get to that in a few days' time once I think it's fair to give it a few days to really see some numbers. So yeah, no review yet. There's 8 critic reviews. So let me just read through some of these, folks. So first one is from Ben Kenigsberg of the New York Times. He says, "Question the film and you're a chump, it implies, but anyone who sits through its nearly 2 hours of unprovable claims is a chump of a different sort." Thanks for that, Ben. Avi Offer, NYC movie guru, said, "A slickly edited and provocative but repetitive and unsurprising documentary." So he's given it a fresh rating, so that's good. But even within that, repetitive and unsurprising. Tom O'Brien from Nick's Best Picture gave it a 5 out of 10 and said, bear in mind, folks, those first ratings, they were both November this year. The rest of them are from March. So who saw it back at South by Southwest? Around that time, Tom O'Brien said, "At its most speculative point, The Age of Disclosure comes off as unsolved mysteries dressed up in a suit and tie." Nate Richard said, "If the job of The Age of Disclosure was to convert skeptics, it failed." Gave it a 5 out of 10. Nick Johnston from Vanyaland said, "The approach taken here is heavy-handed to the point of being po-faced." Ouch. Daniel Feinberg, who is the Hollywood Reporter, he is a top critic on here, said, "My problem with The Age of Disclosure isn't the lack of opposing voices. It's that there couldn't be experts debunking anything here. Nothing is proven and thus nothing can be refuted." Owen Gleiberman from Variety said, "The evidence, if you truly look at it, isn't all that compelling. It's fascinating to look at, but quite inconclusive. It's hardly the stuff that alien dreams are made of." And Christian Zilko from IndieWire, who is again a top critic, gave it a B+, who said, "As someone who has never been persuaded by anything I had ever heard about aliens before watching the film, I feel qualified to tell you that The Age of Disclosure is really, really convincing." Like I say, I'm going to give it another day or two. Really, let's see what happens in terms of media reaction, what more gets picked up online. I'll get to check out Farah on Rogan, the Grush interview and whatnot. And yeah, really intrigued to see what you thought of it. So please get in touch with me, either email ufouapam@gmail.com or use that ufopodcast.com/contact to let me know your thoughts. What I'll do, folks, is I will round up there. I've been with you for nearly 40 minutes sharing my opinion. And please let me stress whether you thought I've come across as really positive, really negative, somewhere in between. I'd like to think it's been somewhere in between. It's my honest thoughts, but it's just my opinion. I can be wrong, not often. No, you might think differently, and that's completely fine. I have seen everything online from people declaring this is disclosure, which is not, but also people saying this is awful, there's nothing, and I think they're really missing the point if that's the case. But I think when it comes to the general public, that's who this is meant to be aimed at. So yeah, let's see where it goes. It's finally out. I'm glad it's out there. There'll be some good points to come from this. I'm recording that'll come out in the next day or two with Pavel from Psycho Activo. If you get a chance to check that one out, my thoughts on it, and I'm looking forward to having that conversation. I'm hoping to have Representative Eric Burleson join me on the podcast to talk about the documentary. I'm also re-hosting Reed Summers, who was a hugely popular guest a few weeks ago around the intent of non-human intelligences. He's coming back on. Get your questions over for that one, folks. And at the end of this week, huge podcast with Joe McMonagall, famous remote viewer. Some big shows this week, plus that media review, the reaction to Age of Disclosure, what's come of it. All that to say, folks, enjoyed the Age of Disclosure. If you want something different, check out The Page of Disclosure and my book, Atlas of UFOs. It's available online. Thank you to everyone who's left a review so far. I've left my 5-star review on Amazon for The Age of Disclosure. If you could do the same for me for the book if you've bought it. And if you've not bought the book, it makes a wonderful Christmas gift for someone. Lots of content to come from November and December. I am now booked with guests all the way through to the end of the year with lots of great and interesting content to come. So, as always, I will speak to you soon. That's all for this episode of That UFO Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and watching. If you enjoyed the show, please follow, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps others find the show. If you're watching on YouTube, hit like, subscribe, and turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. You can also support the show directly and get early access, ad-free episodes, and bonus content on Patreon or by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube memberships. All the links are over at thatufopodcast.com or in the show description below, along with merchandise and more. Don't forget, you can also pick up a copy of my book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, available now in all good bookstores and through online retailers, including Amazon. Big thank you again to all of you for listening and tuning in. Until next time, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see it.